Hello and welcome to Money Wisdom. I'm John Stillman alongside Eric Hogarth, certified financial planner and partner at Johnson Brunetti, the official wealth management partner of the Yukon Huskies. Eric, always a pleasure. What's happening with you?
I'm doing fantastic, John. How are you?
Doing great. Always a pleasure to get your wisdom on the program here. And we're just going to dive right into it today. Not that we don't always dive into it. We don't waste a lot of time with chit-chat on this show. We're going to talk today about how you grew up and how that affects your financial planning, maybe in ways that you've never even stopped to think about. And I know to a large extent, Eric, playing the role of therapist sometimes comes into play when you're being a good financial advisor, because sometimes you have to work through some of these things. So the values that people were taught growing up, maybe the economic conditions that they lived through as kids, those things can have a lasting and significant effect on their psyche and how they deal with money, how they interact with money as adults. So I would be interested for you to explain how you've seen some of these different upbringings, let's call it, sort of manifest themselves in the financial mindsets that people have as adults. So obviously there aren't many of these people still living, but I know earlier in your career, you would have dealt with a lot of them. And that's the people who lived through the Great Depression as a kid. How did that usually affect their financial behavior once they were adults?
Well, and you talk about, you know, how does it affect you long term? Because no, I'm not seeing as many of these people face to face as I did years ago, but I'm having plenty of conversations, with their kids who still talk about their parents' almost inability to spend money. You know, outside looking in, it's easy. It's, well, you know, you got plenty of money. Why don't you just go do this? Based on that experience you had when you were little in those formative years, I mean, that might be a literally painful thing for someone to do. What if I run out? Well, you're not going to run out, but they feel like they're going to run out, you know, and you talk about, you know, finding the balance of living for today, but also making sure that you're going to be okay later, you know, and that's what you build a plan around. A lot of the people from that era or who had parents in that era, they really couldn't live so much for today. They didn't really look at it that way, for being so fearful of, you know, remembering that time when there was nothing.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting when you compare. I know we reference the book, The Psychology of Money, a lot on this show. But it's pretty interesting when you look at the difference in just what the economy was doing when you were in your formative years, whether it was as a kid or maybe your first years as an investor. So like maybe your early 20s, late 20s. Really has a lasting effect on your life. And, you know, if you saw the stock market lose, what, 90% in your formative years? Yeah, you might be a little mistrustful of it.
And also, you know, did that mean anything to you? You know, your parents' situation when you were a kid, you know, what'd they do for work? Were they even in the stock market? You know, some people are like, well, that doesn't mean anything to me. I don't have any money in the stock market. And of course, today's, you know, average worker or pre-retiree, you know, that it does mean a lot to them, because that 401k is what's going to be there for the rest of your life. So it's so different than it once was. But yeah, certainly. I mean, that has a huge impact on people's outlook forever, is what was that experience when you were a kid?
And stuff like that can go the other way too. Like, yes, maybe some people, it didn't really affect them because the parents didn't have anything invested in the stock market. But I remember JFK talking about, I don't remember JFK talking about it, I'm not that old, but I remember hearing about JFK talking about the fact that he had no firsthand knowledge of the Great Depression, because for the Kennedy family, you know, it didn't affect their lives. Their properties just became more valuable and they were able to acquire more properties at, you know, great sale price. And, you know, he says his only real memory of the Depression was his dad hiring more gardeners just so they could have a job and feed their families. So not everything affects everybody the same way.
Yeah.
What about for people who grew up very poor? Doesn't necessarily have to have been during the Depression, but just grew up very poor. What kind of relationship do you find that they have with money as adults?
Well, very poor is a relative term, right? People that find themselves in a financial position more than where they were when they were younger, I would think, for the most part, have a high value on financial security because when they were young, they didn't have any of that security. So, and this is interesting when you get into the conversation, which I bet we're going to talk about in a little bit here, is the difference between people who saved money and people who were given money. And I'm not being negative on that. But I find, you know, a lot of the times where a parent, let's say, right, they're getting, you know, into retirement and later on in retirement, and they start thinking about, geez, if I don't spend all this money and this money ends up going to my kids, how's that going to affect them? Because a lot of the reasons that the 70 and the 80-year-old is really good with money and makes good financial decisions is because it took you 50 years to save the money. You know, you remember the decisions that you made. Well, I'm not going to do this so that I can save, so I can be independent in the future, so I'm not going to have to, so I can live how I want to live. But it's interesting on this stuff. I remember, you know, the big famous motivational speaker, Tony Robbins. You know, I was at an event he was speaking at, and it was years ago. Yeah. And he said some very, very, what's the word, like cliched line about, like, you know, I want you to think about, you know, what you want most in this world. You know, picture it in your brain. And, you know, I'm going to give it to you in the next 30 seconds. And everyone's like, here we go. I'm fine. Okay, fine. You know, I'm picturing this thing. And, you know, someone, you know, pictures a stereotypical thing. And it's like, oh, I want a Ferrari. That wasn't my thing, but, you know, it's a cool thing.
Well, so anyway, you tell us what your thing was?
No, I can't remember what it is. I would like to think that it was like happiness and health for my family.
Oh, that's adorable.
In the driveway next to the Ferrari. But,
of course.
But that was his point. His point was that, you know, because he would boil this thing down and be like, well, why do you want a Ferrari? Well, because it means that I can afford a Ferrari. Well, why does that matter? Well, it means that I'm successful. Why does that matter? It means that I can support my family. Why does that matter? Because I want to feel safe. Well, why does that matter? Because that's what I think I need to do as a human. You know, I went through that quick. But getting back to the psychology of money, why do you save money in the first place? So that we can live how we want to live. And how everyone wants to live is different. But into this stuff of when you grew up very poor, what's your relationship with money in the future? It's security. It's not about being able to buy things, which people make jokes about that that's what it is. But I do think that hits it right in the head, because that's what Tony Robbins was getting at, is that what we're in pursuit of is the way it makes us all feel. Always stuck with me.
Yeah, I've heard it said that you know, most people don't necessarily want the most logically perfect portfolio, right? What they really want is the ability to sleep at night and not worry about their investments. And if there was a way mathematically where you could say, look, over the next 30 years, you'll make more if you do it this way. But most people don't care about that. Most people would rather not have such a rocky road for that 30 years, even if it means they make a little bit less over time.
Well, and what's the thing that people say? And I'm not poking fun at this, just being direct, that when people are like, you know, if I had just bought that Apple stock in 1981, you know what that stock could be worth today? And Joel said this to me years ago, and he is right. You know, my business partner, Joel Johnson, is that you wouldn't still own it. Like, if you put $1,000 into Apple stock in 1981, you know how much that'd be worth today? We'd all have so much money. Like, you wouldn't, because you would have sold it.
You would have sold it either when it lost a lot or when it, you know, went up tenfold.
You would have
sold it at 10,000 and said, all right, well, I did really well on that. Made 10x what I put in.
Just because you're absolutely right, is that it's, why do people seek out professional advice? And some, it's people have a tendency of taking too much risk with their own money or doing the wrong thing at the wrong time because they're concerned that they're going to mess it up. And it's just, that's why having a plan is so important.
But people say the same thing about Amazon stock, by the way. If I'd bought Amazon in 1996 and wrote it out, well, only one person has had Amazon and wrote it that whole time. You know who that was? Jeff Bezos.
He sounds like a smart guy.
Yeah, he did pretty well for himself. All right, we're talking about how you grew up and how those things that you learned about money, the ways you interacted with money or saw your parents interact with money in your formative years, might affect your psychology today and you don't even realize it. How about this? If somebody grew up in a wealthy family, Eric, do they usually end up achieving great wealth themselves as an adult if it's not through an inheritance of some kind?
You certainly hope that they do, and I've seen it happen this way. I mean, it goes back to the parents, right? What's their relationship with wealth? You know, the cliched line again around someone who grows up with a whole bunch of wealth is, do they have an appreciation for it? Do they think it was just fabricated out of fresh air here? I mean, and that's the concern with so many people that I'm talking to, that, you know, the focus initially is, okay, are we going to be okay? We want to make sure that we have enough to provide for us, you know, for as long as we both live. And if there's anything left, we want it to go to our kids. Well, once they get older and the reality of, yeah, we're going to give our kids a whole bunch of money, that can be a bit nerve-wracking too, because you want to help your family out. But a lot of what has created a lot of drive in people is that they didn't have that. No one gave it to them. So they worked real hard for it. And you want your kids to feel the same way. So that's an important conversation too. Because why leaving money to your kids? Well, to help them. Well, then have a conversation and make sure that is in fact what you're doing.
All right. So last thing we'll hit here is the ways that families communicate about money. So do you see that families are communicating about money in a productive way, in an unhealthy way, maybe not communicating at all? And when I say families, it could be husbands and wives. Yeah. It could be generationally. Like, how do mom and dad communicate about money with the kids, even their adult children? What do you see on that front?
Well, no one's reinventing the wheel here. It seems to be the case that every parent generation thinks their kids' generation spends too much money on silly things. So, the picture changes of what is reasonable. But as I say so much when we're talking, it doesn't matter what anyone else is doing, right? A lot of what we talk about is general, right? The reason that we have that visit is to talk about the specifics of you. Right? You know, what is a reasonable rate of return for one person? Drastically different for someone else. How much do you spend a month? Drastically different from someone else. Are you comfortable talking to your kids about money? Very different here. Now, people, you know, have a tendency to joke, my kids are, you know, going to inherit this money and, you know, buy a bunch of BMWs. They're probably not gonna, but they probably will make mistakes if they're not educated in regards to what the options are. And you can't get frustrated over what they do with the money if you never had a conversation about them with regards to what this money is for. You know, a lot of retirees don't have a will, or, you know, their beneficiaries are out of date. And it's like, these aren't fun conversations, but these are really important conversations. So yes, I do think, you know, look who I am and what I do. You know, every time my wife and I pretty much go anywhere without our children, I leave a folder on my desk, you know, in case of emergency thing. But you got to hope best case scenario and also plan worst case scenario. You don't want to leave this stuff up to, well, they'll just figure it out. Why are you making it harder for people? I think having this conversation is important at a certain age, because your kids want to help you out and they also want to honor you when you're gone. And if they don't know this stuff, how are they supposed to do that?
One of the problems, I think, Eric, is that a lot of people can't communicate about their financial situation because maybe they don't understand it enough themselves. So explain to us how the MoneyMap retirement review process might help alleviate that problem.
That is a good point. A lot of people I find are actually in a better position than they think they are. But, you know, what do you do during your working years? You save as much money as you can, and you hope that every month you have enough money to pay your bills and save a little bit for later. And you keep putting money into this bucket, and you put money into this bucket. And right around now, this bucket might be going down despite how much you're putting into it based on I'm paying for college. I just bought a house that's overpriced given what the market's doing. The market's going down. Whatever the case is, a lot of people arrive at retirement feeling like they have a whole bunch of different stuff going on. And I really, really hope I saved enough money into that bucket, but I don't know. Because none of us know what we don't know. So that visit is about, you know, getting to know you, what's going on, what's on your mind, what you're thinking, how you're feeling about this stuff. To be able to answer that question, did you save enough money? Answer one question. Did you save enough money to live how you want to live for as long as you're going to live? You need to know the answer to that. And a lot of people need guidance around answering that. And that is not about buying Apple stock or Amazon stock, even though it's fun to talk about. It's about, tell me more about what retirement's going to look like for you. And it's fun to talk about trips, not just about that. Let's talk about life. What do you want it to look like? And we'll figure out how well prepared you are for that. And you give us a call and we'll schedule a visit and we'll have that conversation. And that's what it is. And a lot of people are sitting down with, you know, they have advisors, or they manage things on their own, or they might even have a plan. But a free second opinion, an opportunity to talk through this stuff with a fresh set of eyes, how could that be a bad thing?
So here's how you can get in touch if you'd like to go through that Money Map Retirement review process and get that second set of eyes that Eric is talking about. You can either call or text, whichever is easier for you. Whichever of those things you're doing, though, the number is the same. It's 800-705-1232. That's 800-705-1232. If you're calling, just leave a message. Let us know you'd like the Money Map Retirement review. We'll get back with you and find a time to make that happen. Or you can text. Just be sure to include your first and last name if you're texting. 800-705-1232 is the number. That's 800-705-1232. You're listening to Money Wisdom with Eric Hogarth, certified financial planner and partner at Johnson Brunetti, the official wealth management partner of the Yukon Huskies. We've been talking about sort of some financial psychology, how your childhood and the way that you saw your parents interact with money might affect you as an adult. Well, sort of the fast-forwarding of that conversation is receiving an inheritance, or maybe putting yourself in a position to leave an inheritance. So, Eric, let's tackle some of the major questions that people tend to have, especially when they have received an inheritance. So I know, because of the fact that you work primarily with people that are about to retire or recently retired, or maybe that was them 10 or 20 years ago, you've worked with a lot of people who have received an inheritance after becoming a client of yours. Or maybe that's how they became a client in the first place, was they got an inheritance and they said, wow, I don't know what to do with this. So I think a lot of people worry about the tax implications of the money that they're inheriting. What do people need to know on that front in terms of the taxation?
I don't know how many people are aware of estate tax, right? They kind of know about the, you know, the myth of the estate tax, or the, you know, the horror story of estate tax, that when you die, there's this massive amount of that is owed. It doesn't really happen that often. And that is if it's a particularly awful lot of money. So the reality is that, you know, as I was saying before, it's mistakes often that are triggering taxes at death, because there are some things that exist now where, you know, there are tax advantages when people die and certain stuff, like life insurance is tax-free, you own stock outside of a retirement account, that's going to step up in basis, and the house is going to step, you know, all this stuff that's going to eliminate some gains. So the immediate thing to do when someone's passed away is to get an accounting of where things are, because depending upon how taxes are going to affect that account is going to impact how you're going to move it, how you're going to distribute it.
So we passed this thing. We passed. You and I are not legislators, but the country passed the Secure Act back in 2020. And I think it passed probably in January of 2020. So the news about it was quickly subsumed by the pandemic. So I think the Secure Act kind of didn't land on everyone's radar, maybe the way it should have. Mm-hmm. How did that legislation affect people who are inheriting money now?
Okay, so that's a big deal. And, you know, when you can get a little bit political on this one, which Joel said, don't get political on this, but it's to some extent, the people retiring today are good with money, and maybe the IRS has given up on you taking out chunks of money all at once and paying a bunch of taxes on it. So maybe they're banking on your kids taking the money out, you know, quickly and paying a bunch of money in tax on it. So what it affects is for non-spouses, right? If you're married, this is not you. But if you both die or on the second death and you leave that money, let's say, to your kids, that account, you know, the withdrawal rules of a beneficiary IRA has got to be drained within 10 years. So you got to take all that money out over the next 10 years. And
to clarify, this is only IRAs we're talking about.
So these are pre-tax retirement accounts. So same thing. If you had this money in an old 401k, which you probably should have moved to an IRA. That's not investment advice, but that's probably what you want to do for a number of reasons. So you move the money into an IRA. You've never paid any taxes on the money. Correct. That is the money that you have to take out over a 10-year period of time and pay taxes on it as ordinary income. So that's a big deal and very different from what it used to be, which if you say, well, I have a beneficiary IRA and I don't even take money out of it. Okay, for the record, you're supposed to be taking money out of it, even though people don't always get caught not doing that. You're supposed to take money out every year. But if it's one of the older ones, you can do that over the rest of your life. And the change now is it has to be drained in 10 years. So that's a big deal. That's a lot of tax.
So if you inherited an IRA in 2018, before this legislation was passed in 2020, you don't have to adopt the new rules where you have to clean it out in 10 years, right? You're still grandfathered in under the...
Correct. You are still grandfathered in it.
Very helpful. All right.
But if you are not grandfathered in, don't mess this up because those are penalties and those are a lot of taxes.
You said earlier that mistakes tend to lead to taxes.
Yep.
When it comes to estate planning, what are some of those mistakes that you see? Maybe by the people inheriting the money, or maybe the people who left the money behind. What are the mistakes you see that make things more difficult than they should be?
Not having current beneficiaries on your account, on an account that's not a retirement account, not having a transfer on death, not titling bank accounts in joint name, if that makes sense in your family. There's all these things that, like those three things I just mentioned, do not cost any money to fix. $0 to fix, and they make life infinitely easier at death. So those are mistakes. You know, I'm not an attorney. I actually heard an attorney the other day say, you know, I don't know that everyone needs a will. I mean, I've always believed that people should have a will, and you should use an attorney to get it and not trust the internet that you're going to do it the right way on your own, because if you didn't go to law school, you know, you probably shouldn't be writing your will, in my personal opinion. It's not just about money. You know, what about the stuff that you have and you care about? If you want to make certain that certain things go to certain people, or that they might not even know that this ring you have, you always wanted to give to them, but you never did it doing your, you know, write this stuff down. Those are mistakes. Those are important things. I know they're not the most fun conversations, but they might be some of the most important.
Well, if you have yourself received an inheritance, or you just want to make sure that you're in a position to leave an inheritance to the people that you love and make sure that you're doing that as efficiently as possible, especially from a tax perspective. Again, the Money Map Retirement Review is something we would invite you to help you navigate those difficult roads. If it's not something you've done every day, you're probably not going to be an expert on it. So why not talk to somebody who's been down this road with other people hundreds, if not thousands of times? So Eric, very quickly, the Money Map Retirement Review, what are people going to walk away with after they come in for that?
They're going to walk away with the Money Map, which is the one-page financial plan, which, if nothing else, is a one piece of paper that you can look at and say, this is where we are, right? You die without a will. You die without a plan. You never talk to your kids about this stuff. They find this piece of paper, they know where you are, right? It's dated, and it's a good thing to go off. Well, yeah, everyone has that. Do they? Like, they don't. Because I see the people that come in after someone died and they didn't know what they had, and they have Stop and Shop bags back when they were actual plastic bags, just full of papers that are 50 years old saying, what is this stuff? The one-page plan makes it easier. So if nothing else, you get that map, and that will hopefully decrease significantly some of your anxiety on this stuff, because at least now you know where you are.
So if you'd like that Money Map Retirement Review for yourself, you'll make it easier on yourself, more peace of mind for you throughout your retirement. You'll also make it easier on anybody you're leaving money behind to. Reach out now. 800-705-1232 is the number to call. That's 800-705-1232. No cost, no obligation to go through the Money Map Retirement Review process. You can ask whatever questions you need to ask. You'll walk away with the tangible things that Eric just described there, the one-page money map being the centerpiece of all of it. You'll also leave with a copy of one of the books from the Johnson Brunetti Library. Maybe you'd like the Money Map book. Maybe you'd like Forced to Retire. Maybe the People's Retirement Handbook. A lot of things for you to choose from there. Again, the number to call, 800-705-1232. That's 800-705-1232. Eric, thanks as always for your wisdom.
Always great to be on, John. Always enjoying our time together.
We'll do it again next week, right here, same time, same place, on Money Wisdom. Until then, have a great week.
Money Wisdom is sponsored by Johnson Brunetti. Investment advisory services offered through JB Capital, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Insurance products offered through JN Financial, LLC. Johnson Brunetti is a paid sponsor of the Yukon Huskies athletic program.
Better Money is sponsored by Johnson Brunetti.